All right, guys, I'm pretty sure we're live. This is Optimus Fields at My Living Truth, and you're back for another episode of Bitcoin Kindergarten. Of course, we're at block height 733,887, and the current price per Bitcoin is 39,465, which equals out in Moscow time to 2,534 sats per dollar. So, guys, Bitcoin is on sale. You better go be stacking. Without further ado, Weinekes, do the ad reads.
All right. Well, we have two sponsors today, and I did not plan this ad read, so let me just improvise off the top of my head. The first sponsor is Simply Bitcoin. We know that you think of Bitcoin daily, and guess what? Simply Bitcoin is there to occupy your Bitcoin mental space. Yes, you're thinking about it 100% of the day. Well, you got Nico, Phil, good guys, and they're creating great content. So please tune into Simply Bitcoin every day, YouTube, Bitcoin TV, and all the other streaming platforms. We also have open source memes. Yes, opensourcememes.com. They have an initiative going. Don't fund devs, fund Bitcoin memers. Yes, you might notice that Bitcoin devs are always fighting about deploying features and you don't know what's going to be built. Well, guess what? Bitcoin memers will build whatever you want. Just hire a memer and you can create the propaganda that will fulfill your messaging dreams.
Weinekes, that's the best ad read we've ever had on the show. Absolutely beautiful. All right, guys. Here we are. I'm pretty sure our guest today doesn't need an introduction, but if he does, this is Pierre Rochard. He works at Kraken, but for plebs like me, he is an OG without any contentions. If you think you've created a Bitcoin meme, Pierre Rochard and Bitstein, Michael Goldstein, have already created it. They are the meme lords. Before we were here, they were creating all the fire memes. And back in the day, I got orange-pilled listening to Pierre's podcast with Bitstein, noted podcast, amazing work. It was literally Pierre, Bitstein, Marty Bent, and Stefan Lavera that got me here to this point. They were my Austrian economics teachers, and I listened to their podcast hours and hours and hours, and they're the reason why I'm orange-pilled. So I am honestly honored, and it's somewhat surreal to have Pierre Rochard on Bitcoin Kindergarten today. So, Pierre, welcome, bro. It's a pleasure, man. I'm super excited for this.
Thank you for the very kind introduction, and hopefully it doesn't inflate my ego too much and turn me into an influencer.
Well, we all know that you are the OG pleb out there, and you seem to be the anti-influencer, Pierre, so I think you'll do good.
We'll see.
Awesome. All right, so if you guys are familiar with Bitcoin Kindergarten, you know that we ask the hard-hitting questions around here. We're asking the questions that no one is asking on other Bitcoin podcasts. And before we go any further, we have to clear up some of the rumor mill. So, Pierre, we don't want to put you on the spot, but we're putting you on the spot. So, rumor has it that you still own shares. Is this fake news or facts?
Unfortunately, it's true. I'm sitting in one right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe you are an influencer.
Yeah.
Kill your heroes.
I'm out. Sellout, a chair out influencer for sure. Full of hypocrisy. But, you know, the way I rationalize it is that the bad influencers do the good thing in private and then promote the bad thing. I promote the good thing and then do the bad thing in private, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's it's an honorable way to go. Me and Weinekes have found that We are very transparent in the fact that we're scamming our fans via lightning tips, and we still somehow manage to have a fan base of Bitcoin maximalists that scam themselves out of their tips. So I understand the mind games that you're working with, Pierre.
Yes, I mean, always be scamming, always be calling out the scammers. That's the circular economy.
Exactly. Beautiful, beautiful. Weinikus, how about you ask this next one? This is your find. This is your rabbit hole.
So, Pierre, I just want to say sell your chairs is one of the better memes I've ever heard. It's probably the slogan that orange pilled me. Like, I even went to Asia to learn how to sit on the floor and sleep on the floor. So I really practiced the no chairs thing, and I started going down a rabbit hole, which caused me to research the world's most expensive chairs. So did you know that in 2009, a chair sold for $28 million. It's the most expensive chair in the world. So I wanted to ask you, is that the fair market value? And in a hyper Bitcoinized world, what do you think that chair should be priced in sats?
Well, let's start with the fiat world, right? Because in the fiat world, as the IMF pointed out, I mean, that's actually the original source of the chair meme is the IMF put together an informational short video that explained that if the price of chairs is not constantly going up, then there's no incentive to ever buy a chair in the present because you could buy it for less in the future. So they really had a big brain moment there that was really insightful for everyone that, they're right. Chairs are entirely optional. We could go without them. Now, that chairs are selling for $28 million now, that sounds like hyperinflation, but let's keep in mind, the price can go higher. You know, it can go to $29 million. It can go to $30 million. So you, from their point of view, from the fiat maxi point of view, you should still be buying chairs, even at $28 million, because they're going to get more valuable, and you should buy now and FOMO in.
Yeah, keep in mind, this was in 2009, pre-Bitcoin, so who knows where this could go.
But on the flip side, if you are into Bitcoin, you've got the opposite incentives interacting here. And so you're going to have to either not buy the $28 million chair. If you already bought the $28 million chair, you should sell it and buy some Bitcoin with that dirty fiat. And you mentioned going to Asia, but I'm going to call you out on this because I think that this is virtue signaling because they still use cushions over there, right? Am I wrong?
Well, now we're getting into the is a cushion a chair discussion, and we know that could last a good hour, so
we'll leave that for. Do cushions cost money? Do they cost
money? I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Are cushions free or do they cost money?
I don't know. You're making me think.
You're backstepping now, Weinikus.
I didn't always sit on a cushion. But yeah, they do sit on cushions there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are some expensive cushions out there. Let's not minimize that.
Beautiful. So, Pierre, we did start the show mentioning that you do work at Kraken. As a professional in the industry, how do you find the right balance between being a professional and being a professional shitposter?
I don't, and I get grief for it on both sides. People saying, hey, ever since you joined Kraken, you're kind of boring and you've become tame. And then I also get people from Kraken saying, hey, you need to tone it down. You need to be, following the company messaging. So it's very hard to strike a balance. And I just, it's kind of like Elon Musk with free speech, right? As long as both sides are complaining, then I think that we're doing the right thing.
Words of wisdom. I'm taking notes. I am taking notes, Pierre. Walton, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I'm not usually one for hands raised, but I thought it might be polite. Having met you guys finally in Miami, though Weinikus still owes me a fucking hat. Like that's not cool. But a question for Pierre. Why are you cool, and why is Dan Held such a bitch?
So that's very unfair of you. Very unfair. You know, the reason I think that Dan gets a lot of grief from the plebs is that Dan is, you know, trying to bring in new people, and that can, you know, I think that his approach of it is informed by his experience in Silicon Valley at, you know, high growth companies. And so he does think about questions of growth and marketing a lot. And I think that, you know, the there's room for all sorts of different approaches to education and to accelerating adoption of Bitcoin. So I think that, you know, if you don't like Dan or if you don't like me, that's okay, because there's, you know, some a deep bench of, you know, big names in Bitcoin. I think that sets us apart from other ecosystems. So we're, you know, got lots of different people with different kinds of messages focused on different parts of Bitcoin, different, you know, approaches to this. So point of view on it.
All right. Guys, give Pierre some softballs to start off with, guys. Come on. Don't be assholes straight off rip. We got a special guest here, guys.
5 hours ahead of me, so I apologize.
No, all questions are fair. Don't self-censor. If it's a really bad question, I'll tell you to go F yourself.
But, Pierre, I've got a real question for you.
Go for it.
All right. My analysis of the mining market right now is that you're basically plebs are at a huge disadvantage, because the people who are really making money mining right now are public miners who are able to go take on debt. It effectively amounts to a speculative attack. My question is, do you kind of see it the same way? And do you think that that will pick up steam or lose steam? Or like that can kind of become the key vector for the speculative attack over the next like short to medium term period?
I'm on the advisory board of Riot Blockchain, which is one of the largest publicly traded Bitcoin miners. So, you know, that's just a full disclosure. I don't have any inside information, but if you look at their public filings, to my knowledge, they don't have any debt. Traded miners are doing that, but the capital markets in general for Bitcoin mining right now are, I would say, pretty tough. If you look at the trading of the Bitcoin miners that are on, you know, NASDAQ or whatever exchange it is, they are, go look at the price history. It speaks for itself. So I think that right now everyone's, you know, trying to build profitably. And I don't think that there's such a big chasm between the big miners and the little guys. Now, there are economies of scale with being a big miner. And I think that I've never personally mined myself, right? So that's probably a gap in my Bitcoin resume. But my view of it was, I saw people get burned by Butterfly Labs, and that turned me off the idea of Bitcoin mining myself. I'd rather personally own sats than own a mining rig. And I know that there are different points of view on this, but that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I would definitely way rather own sats in general. Do you think that that speculative attack part of the market could develop over the next 5 years? Like, as the speculative attack kind of gains steam in general, do you think the mining markets, like the ability for miners to get debt backed by the collateral of the equipment and their infrastructure, could become a vector for the speculative attack?
So it could, but it's a very risky one. For the same reason that borrowing against your Bitcoin to buy more Bitcoin is very risky. I think that the least risky speculative attack approach is to leverage an unrelated asset. So, for example, Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy, right? That there is not a correlation between the Bitcoin price and MicroStrategy's business revenue. So I think that folks should be really careful about leveraging up of, you know, whether it's borrowing against mining rigs or borrowing against Bitcoin to buy more Bitcoin. The speculative attack also, I think, really it's for people who are market timers, right? Essentially, some you know, people who are traders who are going to leverage up. And now at this point, at the scale we're at, I'm really talking about the large hedge funds. So the people historically who have done speculative attacks well are hedge funds like George Soros, who are able to lever up against bonds, right? Against something stupid and boring, and finance their attack that way, and do it at such a scale that they can actually pull it off and they don't just get squashed by central bank intervention. So I think that we should leave the speculative attack work to the professionals in the hedge fund industry. They're going to do it. They've got to have the right, first of all, education, right? So they've got to be orange pilled. And second of all, opportunity. That is that the market, the macro market and the Bitcoin market have to be aligned to enable a successful speculative attack and to destroy the dollar.
Yeah, so the way that Bitcoin gets marked to market, I totally agree with the idea of taking leverage against Bitcoin itself. But I guess the idea would be that mining equipment doesn't get marked to market. It can't be marked to market in the same way at the same speed. So can you kind of explain the way you perceive that risk playing out for miners?
Well,
if they were to go get debt backed by the collateral of their ASICs?
So, I don't know the specifics of the loan agreements for Bitcoin mining rigs, but the general idea is that as the Bitcoin price is going down, the value of the mining rigs is going down. Now, you're right that, you know, if the lender is not marking the market very often, but, you know, if the market, if the price goes down for a sustained period of time and those essentially miners get written down, you know, impaired, or there's a new generation of ASICs that comes out and just kind of blows the old generation out of the water, or if hash rate increases more than expected. And, you know, there's lots of reasons mining rigs could decrease in value just depending on what's going on in the market. And if you're leveraged against those and you end up underwater and you've got to liquidate and then you're, you know, out of luck.
Cool. Thanks.
Beautiful. Okay, Pierre, we got a few questions in the YouTube chat. The first one is by Labrahado, and he goes, Pierre, win Bitcoin at 1 trillion per coin.
Or per Satoshi. You know, after the speculative attack, I think that you've got to have the dollar go to zero. I think that there's, you know, a tipping point that we'll reach. I always think that tipping point is closer than it is, you know. Every year, I think that it's happening, but I think that eventually it will. I just am terrible at timing.
So, Pierre, are you saying that this is hyper-Bitcoinization on this next leg up?
Yeah, it's happening.
The dollar. It's happening this time.
Yes, it's finally happening. Different.
Beautiful. All right, we got one more question in the YouTube chat. This is by Corn Guy C. And he goes, what infrastructure would you need to be a quote-unquote big Lightning routing node? He says PIS, laptops, basic PCs, or something heavier.
To be a big Lightning routing node, I think that there's a few things. One is you've got to be thinking about redundancy and backups and failover. So I think you've got to have multiple pieces of hardware, and you've got to have them in different locations that are secure, and that you are You have processes in place and you test those processes. Now, as to the specific hardware, you know, there's a few things you want to look for. So in terms of hard drive reliability and speed, you know what? My son is calling for me, so I'm going to have to drop out for a minute. Be right back.
No worries, Pierre. No worries. All right, guys. Before we go on, will you guys please be nice to Pierre? Jesus, do I need to really say this, guys? He's the GOAT. Walton, I'm looking at you. Guys.
What do you mean you're looking at me? Like, I was being perfectly nice. I actually said I like Pierre. Like,
I know
he's not responsible for another Bitcoiner, but, you know.
You're just doing your job. Autistic counsel. I see you guys. Guys, shoot. If you're in the YouTube chat, you guys can shoot more questions. I will ask them. If you're in the spaces, I'll bring you guys up. Yeah, guys.
I got a question from Full Metal. He said he couldn't really join because of his Wi-Fi issues, but he asked if Pierre worries about any Lightning Network centralization, if there is.
Well, you should probably ask him when he's here, Weinikus.
I know, just keeping that right on the tab
question,
so I don't forget.
Question for everyone on stage while we wait. Like, I'm of the view that basketball is a shitcoin. What do you guys say?
Yeah, reported.
Everyone knows Bitcoin is basketball. Basketball is everything, and ball is life.
Weinikus, don't play when it comes to basketball, Walton.
Oh, you actually booted him? Wow.
Yeah, don't play that. Bitcoin is basketball. We've already gone over this.
Yo, you were so proud of that last tweet you did, for sure. I really liked it.
That was poetry. I got to put in the nest.
Yeah, put it up so we can show the viewers something.
No, Bitcoin is football because it has work. It has real work done.
Yo, who let this guy up here?
It's
again?
Not just like an NFT. It's not just like replicable.
See, yo, we do this. We do all this live on Bitcoin Kindergarten, guys. There is no editing on this show. This is what we do. It's a feature, not a bug.
So, yo, did Big Sean stay awake till like 5 in the morning to like just be a listener? Or?
Dude, it's not about basketball. He doesn't want to come up.
We can make this about basketball.
We already did.
Everything is about basketball, Anikis.
All right, I wrote a poem today, and it was one of my latest tweets.
Okay.
It's in the nest. Ball is life. Wait, I just lost the nest. There it is. Ball is life. Life is time. Time is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is basketball.
Drop horns.
Delayed horns.
Well, we got another special guest appearance. Big Sean Harris in the house. Maybe he can talk about why Bitcoin is basketball and everything is basketball.
Pro orange ball. Orange ball, good.
First of all, that's poetry. Weinikus, poetry in the tweet. Just wanted to hop up because it's 2:30 in the morning where I am, but I love listening to Bitcoin Kindergarten, my favorite late night show, and I love Pierre Richard. Also, everything is basketball. Bitcoin is time. Everything is basketball. That means basketball over 21 million. Hope you guys have a great night. Walton, don't say anything. I'm leaving. See you guys.
Fuck you.
Wait, Sean. It's actually he dipped. I actually had a question, because if Bitcoin is basketball, then is shitcoins just women's basketball? Like, I'm just asking. Like, where are we going with that one?
She's choosing violence.
Well, it's not violence.
You're a biologist.
It's just the truth.
We're saying the same thing. If you're not a biologist, you shouldn't.
If you're not a biologist, you can't tell.
So what does the W in the WNBA stand for?
Winning?
They're not winning.
Weinikus NBA.
Lack of Weinikus NBA.
Hey, look, Mr. Robot agrees, guys. All right. We gonna need a record scratch. So today, I had this realization that Bitcoin Kindergarten isn't just a show about grown men acting like children. It isn't just a show about us orange pilling newcomers, but it is the Bitcoin late night show. Hence why we get so highly regarded here, and hence why people think we're bad for Bitcoin. So that's a new rabbit hole. Last week, after a hell of a show that went absolutely horrible, and you guys seem to have...
What does that even mean, bad for Bitcoin?
Yeah, Walton, exactly my point. It fundamentally shows that the person doesn't understand Bitcoin because he's saying some stupid ass shit. So, you know...
Why is Lurk just haters. Lurking?
You know you're making it when you get DMs of people angry about what you're doing. So, we're just winning out here, guys. And we're going to continue to keep winning because you guys seem to love Bitcoin Late Night Show. So, we're going to make this show as fun as possible. I do have a good soundboard over here. I should have had it going tonight, but I didn't want to waste Pierre's time.
I'm back, by the way.
And it crashed. Yep. All right, beautiful, Pierre. Yep. All right, so, Weinikis, ask Pierre the question you got in the DMs.
Yeah, so this is a question from Full Metal Hoddle, and he was basically asking if... you worry about any Lightning Network centralization at all, and whether the Lightning Network would benefit from node running becoming easier?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think that any well-designed part of Bitcoin is anti-fragile. So whether it's mining centralization or Lightning centralization or anything like that, I think that if it's too centralized, something bad will happen, and that will cause it to become decentralized. So that's, for example, with Lightning, let's say a hub becomes so big and something bad happens, so that hub goes offline, then people would just close their channels and they would open channels with other nodes. So I don't think that there's like an existential problem because Lightning is a well-designed, well-engineered part of the system. A potential edge case type scenario where I would be concerned is if, for example, on-chain fees are going up a lot and then a centralized hub tried to steal from a bunch of peers by broadcasting channel states and then DDoS those peers to keep them offline and essentially stole money that way. You know, so there's things like that where but that's really not really related to centralization because somebody who's a small node could do that. And in fact, that seems more likely in my mind than a big node that's built up a reputation. But that's, there's developers that are constantly trying to make it so that Lightning nodes cannot be DDoSed. And in practice, I really haven't heard of anything nefarious going on, any kind of funny business. So I think that as long as the cost stays low, right, the cost of running a Lightning node or of running a Bitcoin node for that matter stays low, then I don't think that there's a problem with centralization and shenanigans. At this point, you know, you can run a Lightning node on your phone. So Breeze basically does that. But I think that there's lots more work to be done in terms of making Lightning more mobile friendly. But that's I think that's how we get more nodes on. I think that the Raspberry Pi approach with, you know, Umbral and Raspi Blitz is good too. It's very affordable. But if you're trying to run a larger or more reliable node, you can still do that from home. But like get a gaming PC and make sure you're properly backing up and following the instructions on the different Lightning node implementations. Will running a routing node get easier? No, I think that's going to get harder. But just like with Bitcoin mining, right? You can think of it like, did Bitcoin mining get easier or harder? Well, it got harder because having a CPU didn't cut it anymore. Then you had to have a GPU. Then that didn't cut it anymore. Then you had to have FPGA. And then you had to have ASICs. So I think that from a software perspective, that's actually going to be the case with Lightning as well, that if you want to be really good at routing on Lightning, you're going to have to develop increasingly sophisticated, specialized software, and that's not going to be accessible to everyone. But if you just want to run a node as a wallet, then you're going to benefit from the fact that routing nodes are going to get better and better, because then you can just open a channel with any routing node and your payments will be very reliable because those routing nodes are investing in improving their functionality. But I think that a Lightning node wallet will get easier and easier because it's going to abstract away the complexity more and more. So now people can get into a car and they don't have to know how an internal combustion engine works. They just have to know how to drive the car. And so I think that the mobile Lightning wallets are starting to get there.
Beautiful. Vake, you've had your hand up.
Hey, Pierre, I just want to ask a question with the Opsy TV drama and the BIP-119 drama going on. Is there what's your opinion on the best way to gauge the sentiment of Bitcoiners to determine what a new addition should be there to the protocol, like speedy trial? Should we UASF every time? What's your opinion on that?
I think that we should be patient with Bitcoin development. And same thing with Lightning development for that matter. Things take a long time, and we just have to be patient with it.
Do you have a preferred activation method?
Well, so that in my mind is different than gauging the sentiment or interest or, you know, willingness to adopt an upgrade. I think that you actually really only gauge after the fact, right? So it's only last year that blockchain.com adopted SegWit that was activated in 2017. So, you know, if you measured it in 2017, blockchain.com, you know, would have told you, no, we're not interested in SegWit. We're not doing that. You know, increase the block size limit. So I think that in terms of activation, Taproot seemed to have activated pretty easily, but that's different than Taproot adoption, which has only begun now. So I think that, I think we've just got to be really patient. And I understand why certain stakeholders would be impatient and would want to push things forward more quickly. You know, everyone else's role is to be patient, I think.
Ryan, ask a question. Walton, you'll be next.
Well, is Walton gay?
Okay. Walton, go.
My question for Pierre is, overall, Do you view BIP-119 as a positive thing potentially for Bitcoin or not?
Yes, I think it is positive. I think that there's, yeah. So I don't think that there's we shouldn't do BIP-119. But I don't see any urgency to, like, oh, okay, if we don't do BIP-119, then, you know, oh, Ethereum's going to outcompete Bitcoin and it's going to flip in Bitcoin. Like, I think that's kind of a nonsense argument, and that, again, we should be patient. Even things that are good, you know, it takes a long time to have them get integrated into Bitcoin. And so I think that what that period of time allows for, it's not just, you know, getting buy-in from lots of different people, but also sometimes better ideas come around. And so if there's not an emergency, then I don't see any downside to just being patient and, you know, doing more work on it.
Jim, you want to make a comment or question?
Thanks for letting me come up and talk. What's up, Pierre? I wanted to, just for new people that are listening to this, I wanted people to get a handle a little bit about Pierre and his character. I was told a long time ago by listening to podcasts, including his, people like him and his friend Bitstein, that if you really want to learn about Bitcoin, you got to get on Twitter. And I hadn't done any social media, anything. And I went, all right, whatever. So I start following people like Pierre. And I was very fortunate. Excuse me. I listened to some really smart people. And in following Pierre, I see a tweet one day that says, if you want to join me and Saifedean for a steak dinner in New York City, reply to this tweet. And I went, no way, nobody replied yet. And I looked, it was 4 minutes old. And I just said, I'm in, can I come? And he had no idea who I was. And he said, sure, let's do it. And he sent me the information. I sent him some money. And before I knew it, I was hanging out with a bunch of Bitcoiners inside an old bank vault that was turned into a restaurant, having a steak dinner with like 12 people. And I became friends with Pierre and Saifedean and a bunch of other people I've been friends with ever since. And it was literally one of the very pivotal moments in my Bitcoin journey, because I was taken just as seriously as anybody else. Nobody knew me. I had no reputation. I was just a guy really interested, very curious and genuine, wanted to learn. And Pierre just gave a stranger a shot. But he had been doing that for years and years before he started working behind the scenes with Kraken, and he doesn't seem to be on social media as much. But this man has done quite a bit for Bitcoin, and I'm just one simple guy that his generosity touched. I just want everybody to know Pierre's a good dude.
Well, thanks, Surfer Jim. I appreciate that, and it's been great to get to know you over the years and be friends.
Beautiful. Shishi?
Hey, Pierre. I have a lighter question. How do you feel being part of a leaderless cult? And also, secondary question, how do you feel coming on this show 1 week after being called, Optimus and Weinikus got called cult leaders? So now you're in a leaderless cult, which is, I think, Bitcoin Twitter. I call it that, at least, or a religion. And so you're in a cult within a cult. And how does that make you feel?
I think that makes me feel great. I don't have any kind of opposition to cults or religion. I know that there's a lot of people in today's modern world who are very opposed to religion for a number of different reasons. But what ends up being the case is that it's not so much that they're opposed to worship. It's just that they either worship materialism, so the accumulation of physical goods. They worship human culture. So for example, people who binge watch Netflix, right? Like, that's a form of worship. Or they worship themselves, right? They're engaged in extreme forms of narcissism and self-indulgence. And so I think that everyone has to worship. Then it just depends on what it is that they do worship. So I think that, you know, I think about Bitcoin an inordinate amount. I think that I actually do think about Bitcoin too much. And I've been working on thinking about God more. I think that's probably the healthiest thing to worship is God, rather than anything else in the world. But I also do think that, you know, if we look around, the reason why I think that worship of Bitcoin is far more innocuous than any of the other worshiping going on is that you have people who worship the state, right? So they're like, not only are they worshiping or glorifying kind of extreme forms of violence, but also the amount of dishonesty that the state, promotes. And Bitcoin, the other nice thing about Bitcoin is that it's dematerialized. So you have all this value that's going into these 12 words or these 24 words. I heard from Rodolfo that it's got to be 24 now. That's, everyone's agreeing on 24 words being better. And that if you do that, if you put all value into words, then that actually frees you from materialism, because you are now worshiping something that is dematerialized. And even something like gold, I mean, gold's very material, right? So I think that Bitcoin can heal the gold bugs from their worship of gold, and the worshiping Bitcoin is a marginal improvement because now you're no longer worshiping atoms, you're worshiping words. And so at that point, you're just so close to, the word, the Bible. And that's I think we'll see more and more Bitcoiners naturally floating from worshiping Bitcoin into worshiping God.
I was just going to say, and what's up, Pierre? I was just going to say, yeah, like words, and then that can go into logos and the actual word. And yep. I mean, we always like to talk about how Bitcoin is truth. I mean, it's unfuckable. It doesn't lie. Everything's there on chain, transparent. So that's a comment, but I guess this is a nice segue into my question, is what do you see as the like relationship between God and Bitcoin? Because I think a lot of people would agree, but I just see it as God works through man to basically create innovation at times that we need it. And I mean, the Holy Spirit's through everybody. And I kind of see Bitcoin as, you know, a work of God through man out of this time that we need it most. So I don't know. I mean, you probably agree, but I just want to know what your take on that is and the relationship with God and Bitcoin.
Yeah. So I didn't know about Bitcoin's creation, right? Nobody does because we don't know who Satoshi was. So I don't know if Satoshi was a human or if Satoshi was like the Holy Spirit in cyberspace, kind of just creating Bitcoin out of thin air. But in any case, I think that a key foundational principle for God's creation and our role in it is that we have free will. And I think that Bitcoin is, we always talk about the freedoms that Bitcoin gives us. And I think that those freedoms are freedom itself, I don't see as being an inherent good. What is good is when we do good things with that freedom. If we do bad things with that freedom, then that's bad. But the freedom's kind of a prerequisite because I don't think that you can do good without freedom. Lots of footnotes on that. Lots of footnotes. I'm sure that there's lots of things that we could tease out on that. But people are going to do bad things with Bitcoin, right? People have done bad things with Bitcoin. So even something like buying drugs, I know there's going to be lots of people in the audience disagreeing with me. That's okay. You guys are addicts. Go to rehab. But buying drugs is bad, okay? And, even if it's legal, people are doing it with Bitcoin. But that doesn't make Bitcoin bad. I think that it's just a reflection of human freedom. and that it just shows that, you know, the Holy Spirit has more work to do in terms of converting sinners.
Wait, Pierre, if Bitcoin is basketball and basketball is an addiction, then yes. I'm not sure how this all works and how Bitcoin is basketball. Now I'm confused because I thought, you know, but, you know, just saying.
It depends on whether you're playing the basketball or watching the basketball. I think that if you're watching the basketball, that's a reflection of, you know, laziness and sloth, which is sinful. If you're playing the basketball, then you've got, first of all, just the benefits of physical exercise, but also of fraternal love, right? That you're doing this with your brothers and you're having lots of fun and joy. So that's good basketball. But, you know, basketball is like freedom. And so that's why Bitcoin is basketball.
Wow. More eloquent than Sean could have ever basketball pilled me. But breaking, BTC Plebeian, jump in.
Yeah, I've actually got another question, but now I don't want to divert from this conversation because it's so good. I'll just ask Pierre real quick. Have you read Money Messiah, John Vallis's piece yet? And I guess the follow-up would be, have you considered going on a show to talk to him about it? Because it sounds like it could be a fun convo.
Yeah, so I have been on his show. So go refer to that episode.
Chris K, do you have a question?
Hey, yeah. Question about Lightning that was going through my mind. Pierre, do you think there's a way that Lightning can actually realistically onboard every single person in the world in a non-custodial way, as in having their own channel? Or wouldn't that just take forever and then we'll need to look at more custodial solutions for, like, at least part of the population?
So I think that would be a great problem to have, that so many people are trying to onboard onto Lightning that we're running out of block space. That's not the problem we currently have. Currently, we have, not a lot of demand for, well, be more nuanced here. We're not running at 100%. We're running at like 95% full blocks. Somebody fact check me on that. But that means transaction fees are very low and there's room for more onboarding. So I think that the scaling technology of Lightning has gone out ahead of adoption, and adoption needs to catch up. And then amplify that by Taproot. So Taproot's going to make Lightning even more efficient. So I think that the efficiency gains that we'll see over the years are going to outpace adoption unless fiat collapses. And then all bets are off. Everybody has to get onto to Bitcoin. But even in that situation, you'll see people who will, for example, be sending BTC on layer 3, right, which is Visa and MasterCard, because those networks are trustful, right? They're proprietary. They suck, but they're also currency agnostic. So they can have euros, they can have dollars on them, they can have Bitcoin on them. And that, you know, in my mind, people using Bitcoin with Visa is worse than people using Bitcoin with a custodial Lightning node. So that's kind of the thought I would put out there.
Yeah, cool. Thanks.
Jan and Yellen?
Yeah. On top of that question, I was going to ask, what do you think of projects like the Fedi Mint, like the Federated Mint, Shaumin, like eCash solution built on top of Lightning? You think that's a decent proposal for scaling? Should we run into that problem?
It is. It has trade-offs, and I'm not opposed to it. I haven't tried it, but I think that. Yeah, Lightning as is right now has a lot of room to grow. But, you know, I think that's a really great direction that we could go in to explore those trade-offs.
Plebeian, another question.
All right, so here's my question. I'm obviously a huge proponent of self-custody. I've done a lot of work to try to help the onboarding process for that. And but we come up with two problems. One is, as we just hinted at, network capacity, and the other issue is just demand, whether people actually want to take self-custody. And I do think that we're headed into some kind of mixed custody future where there's a large role for depository institutions. I'm just curious. I know you think about Bitcoin a lot, and you're always thinking about it. And I'm curious if you've had any insights into like the roles that bigger like obviously Kraken is positioned to become like a really big deposit, like international depository institution. And I'm just curious if you have any insights, like anything that's popped up that you for like the future that could develop, in, like in terms of like Uncle Jim model on one end, all the way to big giant depository institutions like Kraken.
Yeah, so I think that if we look at the on-chain data, Bitcoin has been leaving large custodians. So where it's going, I don't even know. I think that it's going to a mixture of other custodians, but also of people holding their own keys. I this is another area where Bitcoin is anti-fragile. So if we start seeing a lot of government seizures of accounts at exchanges that are arbitrary and capricious and cause people to withdraw their Bitcoin, that we would see lots more self-custody. I think that the past is an indicator of the future. So I think that there will continue to be people who prefer holding a password and a two-factor authentication as their private keys, purely because that is something that they're familiar with, not because that is a great way of holding private keys. So I think that education is key here, and getting people to just, I think that people think that, oh, okay, I have to buy a hardware wallet and put my life savings onto it. It's like, no, just buy a hardware wallet and play around with it. Move $20 worth of Bitcoin to it and back and forth, and like experiment with it without putting your life, savings at risk, or, from your perspective at risk, even though that might be an irrational, butt clenching you have going on. But that way you're actually experimenting with this technology and familiarizing yourself with it. And then, eventually you can figure out, okay, do I want to do a multi-sig or a single sig and self-custody? But it's not all or nothing.
Beautiful. We got a question in the YouTube chat that got lost. It's from Mr. Robot59. He asked, Pierre, do you think we need more home nodes or more home miners?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, both. Both are good for decentralization. I think that home nodes are more important. That I don't have any doubt about, for a number of reasons. One, obviously, is that you are verifying independently and not trusting anyone else. That's the level of paranoia that you should have with your money. And two, that if you're using your node to look up your transactions, that you have better privacy. As for the home miner, I think that there the benefits from a network perspective are a little more intangible. I can definitely see the argument that, hey, this is helping with decentralization. But I think that I don't want to FUD home mining. I don't have anything against it. But the reason I don't do home mining is because when I have done electricity-related projects, I have lit fires and caused smoke. So that's what has me concerned, is my own, incompetence. So if you are feeling very comfortable about electricity, and you want to set up, your rack in your garage, or whatever it is, then that's great. What I want to see is I want to see somebody who delivers something to your house where it's a box, and you plug it into the electricity, and you plug it into your pool, and it uses mining rigs to heat your pool. That's what I want. And if anyone wants to turn that into a product, that is a product I would buy.
So there's a hot tub jacuzzi called the Spa 256, which I think is one of the best puns in Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And so if somebody can turn that into like something I can, you know, buy on Amazon, and I think that would be a hit. People like heated pools.
Pierre, you might be aware that I'm involved building the Long Island Surf Park, which is going to be a big giant pool for surfing in. And the equipment we're going to make waves with creates heat, and we're going to put it into the water. But we have on the table thoughts of adding mining rigs to use up excess electricity around the usage of the pool. And then, of course, they can also put heat into the water. So we might be creating a system a little bit bigger than off the shelf for a guy at home, but it's already being thought about.
Nice. Yeah. So you won't have to wear a wetsuit in the winter.
Probably still will, but instead of like 35 degree ocean water, it'll be 65 to 7 degree in the pool, even if snow is coming down.
Nice. Yeah. That'll be fun. Well, I want to come try it out when it's ready.
I plan to have a big Bitcoin party. As a matter of fact, the guy in charge of the project, my friend from high school, took me a little while, but I got him. He was convinced to own some Bitcoin back when it was around 11,000. So he's been riding it up and down, but he's still very, very pleased. And he knows I have a whole bunch of Bitcoin friends that can't wait till it's finished. And just for a public update, we're waiting for the government to give us permission, is essentially what it boils down to, permits, multiple different bureaucracies, different layers, different departments. Most of it's done, but we are still waiting on the final go ahead and dig a hole and get started. Tomorrow, actually, I'm getting delivered to my yard, my commercial yard where I keep all my equipment. I'm getting delivered a 40-foot office trailer that I have the task of renovating, which is going to sit at the site while we build, which is going to take about a year. And that'll be our on-site, office to talk to people and do business, you know. So it's moving along. We are going to have a wave pool on Long Island in about a year. We'll be able to make waves from 1 foot to hopefully up to 10 foot on the face, maybe even bigger. That's what our tests have shown. And we're going to be teaching everybody and anybody who wants to learn. And of course, if you already know how to surf, it's going to be an awesome experience. So we're looking forward to it. Anybody wants to check it out, longislandsurfpark.com, and look at the website, and you'll see what we're up to.
Excellent. Yeah. And then do you know what the minimum age will be so that I can teach my son how to surf?
No, I don't believe there'll be a minimum age, essentially. There'll always be lifeguards, very, very safety-oriented, of course. And we can make a wave as tiny as you need to be, as long as the child is able to, you know, essentially not freak out in water, be able to get their head up, and, you know, we can stick them on a board and push them along. They can be one or even less.
Excellent. Well, Jim, he's a great swimmer, so looking forward to it.
And Jim, we got a great comment in the YouTube chat by our buddy Zorn, and he goes, "Freaking surfer Jim, literally using Bitcoin to boil the oceans." So awesome, Jim! Awesome.
good work,
Jan Yellen. Do you have a question?
I do have a question. I wanted to hear Pierre's opinion on Bit47. Blue Wallet was throwing around implementing it. There's been a lot of talk of other wallets implementing it. I wanted to hear your opinion on the reusable payment codes, good or bad.
Yeah, I've heard that they improve privacy, so all for that. I don't know why adoption of it has been so slow, to be honest. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on that. Why is adoption going so slowly for that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I've seen a lot of talk, like Luke Dash talks about that it's going to clog up the mempool, but I can't understand why it would do that. But I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Pierre. Well, I got two questions here, and we'll let you go after these two questions because I know everyone will literally sit here all night trying to get information from you. So the second to last question is, what are you most excited about the future for Bitcoin? Like, what gets you most excited looking into the horizon from today?
So what I'm most excited about is Musig 2, so doing very large multi-sigs. So there's going to be, like, you know, the ability to do 1,000 of 1,000 multi-sig. I don't think that it will have any kind of practical implications, but I think that it could be a lot of fun. And that's what I'm excited about. But the practical smaller multi-sigs, you know, two of two on Lightning and making that a lot more efficient. I think that Lightning adoption is going to continue to have these moments where it's parabolic and then it's kind of sideways and then it's parabolic again, perhaps related to Bitcoin's price, but also related to countries adopting Bitcoin. So Central African Republic just came out, so they're adopting Bitcoin as legal tender. So if we can make inroads there of, hey, let's get all these people using Bitcoin for payments, using Lightning for payments, that would hugely benefit them. And then prove out to the rest of the world that, hey, Bitcoin's actually not just a store of value. It's also an excellent unit of account and medium of exchange.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, Pierre. So we are heavily focused meme show. So it wouldn't be right if we didn't end the show with a meme-oriented question. So you've been in Bitcoin for a while, and you've been a champion of memetics and probably created every Bitcoin meme under the sun with your buddy Bitstein. But what is or what are your favorite Bitcoin memes?
Leota's, I think that was one that I had no involvement in the creation of. And when I started seeing them, it spoke to me really well. I do die of laughter all too often in Bitcoin. So, you know, see a Leota, drop a Leota with the laser eyes, just hilarious. So that's, I think, the one off the top of my head. Let me see if I can think of another one that I found particularly enjoyable. No, that's, well, I mean, there's the... Yeah, and you guys use this one, the midwit, you know, with the bell curve. I think that one's really powerful. I think that there's a lot in life where you do have that phenomenon going on, and Bitcoin seems to be one of those as well, where a lot of the midwits, they get sucked into pump and dumps and, you know, kind of actual Ponzi schemes, not, you know, just like Bitcoin, you know, falsely accused Ponzi schemes. So, those two come to mind.
Wow. Beautiful, beautiful, guys. Literally breaking news on Bitcoin Kindergarten. Pierre Rochard endorses see a Leota, drop a Leota. This is the content you come here for. Weinikis, I see your hand.
Yeah, I mean, I gave everyone a chance to ask questions, but I had one planned. So here it goes. Suppose you were Thanos. Which shitcoiners do you wish could disappear with the snap of a finger? And if you can't answer this question due to reputation purposes, then which things do you wish would disappear?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I mean, I think that, you know, if we go back to the God question, you know, people often criticize religion of, oh, if God is good, why is there so much evil in the world? If God is omniscient and omnipotent, why does he allow for so much suffering? Have people read the book of Job for the non-answer. But I think that it's part of the equation. that all these shitcoins, they do prove Bitcoin's value by demonstrating the contrary of, okay, if Bitcoin were like this, here's why it would be bad. So I think that, you know, wishing that shitcoins did not exist or some or such didn't exist is not realistic and, you know, anchored in reality. Obviously, I mean, it's a fantastical question. So I'll answer it with that. I think the shitcoins cross the line when they attack Bitcoin's open source developers, when you've got billionaires like Chris Larson applying extreme levels of public pressure onto open source contributors, telling them, change the code, change the code, change the code. And the reality is that those open source contributors are powerless. Even if they did change the code, that would not change Bitcoin because nobody would upgrade their software. Nobody would take their node software. And so I think that it's a form of harassment and abuse. And I think that Chris Larson should be not, you know, welcome to conferences or anything like that. I think that he should be an outcast for, you know, really trying to pressure people, developers, into doing something that is ultimately, you know, not going to have any results other than making those developers miserable and, you know, ruining their reputations because they implemented some insecure, you know, buggy software for this billionaire dude. Furthermore, Bitcoin has a process that is generally accepted as you know, somewhat functional, which is that, hey, if you have an improvement idea for Bitcoin, you can go write up a Bitcoin improvement proposal and make a BIP. And when people criticize Bitcoin and say, hey, you guys need to fix Bitcoin, but I'm not going to write a BIP, you know, it's just, I find it insufferable because you're basically just a negative externality. You're saying you're asking people to work for you for free, and you're not actually contributing anything constructive. I mean, the idea that Chris Larson would come along and say, hey, you know what? I think Bitcoin's problem is that it consumes too much energy. It's like, Chris, this has been discussed in, you know, that was like one of the first responses to Satoshi in the mailing list. Does he think this is a novel criticism of, oh, well, thanks, Chris. We didn't realize that Bitcoin consumes a lot of energy. We thought it didn't, and now we know. Oh, well, okay, now that we're aware of this problem, we're going to figure out a solution to it. I mean, it's absurd. So I think that that kind of and, you know, I don't know if Chris is stupid or he's a liar, right? So I don't know if he is actually just low IQ or if he's just a bad faith, you know, person. But either way, I think that the failing here is that we know about Chris Larson, right? That and the reason we know about him is because, one, these environmental groups like Greenpeace are so broke. I mean, they're like broke hippies who are desperate for money from anyone. And they go along with whatever Chris is saying without any kind of due diligence or critical thought. So that's fine. But to me, the biggest ball drop here is the mainstream media that receives a press release from Chris. And normally what the media or what the journalists should do, what their professional obligation is to do, is that when somebody sends them a press release, that they take that press release and line by line, they independently verify whether this information being fed to them is true or not, if it's reflective of reality or not. And obviously Chris's nonsense should have been verified, but was not. Instead of being verified by journalists and debunked, it got amplified. And journalists wrote pieces that were completely uncritical of Chris's nonsense. And, you know, they were spreading it not just on their blogs, but also, like, you know, going onto podcasts. Like, I heard some bozo from the Wall Street Journal went onto NPR. And so they're feeding these normies disinformation. And then, you know, these normies are going to not buy Bitcoin. And that's going to hurt them. So they're only hurting their audience. And I wish they'd stop. But there's the reality is that there's no stopping these people, right? They've got their incentives. And our role is to, for one, accept the fact that Bitcoin's always going to have shitcoiners and critics and no-coiners. And that our role is to provide education, provide counter arguments, provide logic and data, provide dank memes, so that we can win the information war.
Wow, Winekiss, we need some horns, bro. You got to at least get some horns tonight.
That was beautifully said.
Let's go.
Pierre. The same applies to the number go up haters. Like, if they really think Bitcoin's not going to go up forever, they can go ahead and short it as well.
Beautiful. Well, Pierre, I would just want to thank you. This has been awesome. This has been cosmic and toxic and hilarious. So I just want to thank you. This has been awesome. Everyone in the YouTube chat, you guys have been killing it tonight. Everyone that showed up in the spaces, we appreciate it. Pierre, any last words before we roll this one out?
No, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. And I look forward to hearing myself talking. I do listen to podcasts I'm on, which is, really vain. But I like hearing the sound of my own voice.
Yeah, I listen to the podcast, but I hate my own voice. So we're different in that way.
I used to hate it, but I think that now I've just accepted it, and it is what it is.
Wisdom. Well, the whole show has been wisdom from Pierre, guys. And honestly, it has just been surreal. I don't even have the right words for this. But thank you, Pierre, and thank you, everyone. This has been Optimus Fields. At my